Well, from a political science to a little space science, now that NASA's New Horizons has completed its exploration of Pluto, you might wonder what's next for the spacecraft. NASA says it will continue to ply the farthest reaches of the solar system, sending back data for a while until it eventually loses power and becomes just another piece of interstellar junk. Man-made space junk isn't a problem yet beyond Pluto, but it is in the space around planet Earth. From the Here and Now Contributors Network, Todd Bookman of WHYY's The Pulse reports.
There's an old saying that sin begets sin. Well, in space, the sin is junk. Tens of thousands of orbiting objects, from old rockets and satellites to empty fuel tanks and discarded lens caps, it's a swirling graveyard of human space exploration. This litter is moving very fast, posing a risk to both working satellites and spacecraft, which, when struck, beget more debris. The best example of this came February 10, 2009. 500 miles above the surface of the Earth, somewhere over Siberia, a telecommunications satellite owned by a Virginia company was minding its own business.
And it was happily orbiting along, and suddenly an old, dead Russian communications satellite came at it from the side.
The Cosmos satellite, 2,000 pounds of outdated military might, just blindsides it.
And the two things crashed into each other.
Crashed at something north of 20,000 miles per hour. By the way, this is Jonathan McDowell with the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. For him, for everyone that watches space, this satellite collision was big news.
That was really the first major accidental collision that we've had in space.
The accident sent out 2,200 pieces of new shrapnel in a neighborhood of space already crowded with both working and defunct satellites. It was a regrettable scene, and something scientist Donald Kessler had been warning about for decades.
It was really a wake-up call for everybody to realize that, hey, the time is now, we need to do something different.
In 1978, Kessler published a research paper detailing how each collision increased the chances for more collisions, like a slow-motion domino effect. He cautioned that by the next century, meaning this century, we may be looking at a very dangerous belt of debris. The idea, which became known as the Kessler syndrome, caused a stir. The United Nations called him, asking for more information. His bosses at NASA, however, were not impressed.
The problem for me was I wasn't asked to do this work, and consequently, my immediate managers were a little resistant to saying that, okay, we'll continue it because that's not why I hired you.
Upper management saw things a little differently. They promoted Kessler the next year and put him in charge of a new department dedicated to researching orbital debris. The job of tracking debris, however, has always fallen to the United States military.
As soon as the space age began, you wanted to know where the satellites were. And we already had a system in place for warning us when missiles were coming at the United States.
Missiles from the Soviet Union. It was the height of the Cold War, says Jonathan McDowell. Sputnik, the space race, our Air Force was on high alert.
And so the same radar systems and computer systems that were built to warn us of missile attack were adapted to keep track of all the space junk, initially just so that we could know it's not a missile.
The command center for this tracking system was in Colorado, burrowed into the side of Cheyenne Mountain. Today, the Air Force still tracks space debris, but in a far less secretive fashion. It makes publicly available some of the orbital data for about 22,000 tracked items. So we've got lots of eyes on it. Now, the question is, what exactly do we do about all that junk?
I think there's been a lot of discussion about, for example, using lasers from the Earth to zap pieces of small debris and melt them, using kind of like butterfly nets made of aerogel to snag up pieces of space debris. And I don't think those are super practical ideas.
McDowell says a more likely solution is to go after just the larger pieces, the old satellites, either push them out into unused orbits or safely bring them down. But there isn't consensus on how to do this, or who should do it, or who should pay for it. Brian Whedon with the group Secure World Foundation, which advocates for the long-term use of space, says this challenge of getting everyone on board is a good example of a well-known economic theory, the tragedy of the commons.
Put simply, the notion is that if you have an area that is shared by everybody, that's common to everybody, And the classic example is a grazing area for a farm or for a village, where everyone's grazing their animals in one area, but nobody owns it.
Then you run into a situation where it's in everyone's self-interest to use the grazing area as much as possible, meaning no one is paying attention to the collective damage from overuse.
Translate that to space. This is a big question everybody has. Space is big, but there are certain regions in orbit that are very useful. And so there's a lot of satellites, and they're used by a lot of countries.
More than 60 different countries have launched satellites. Israel, China, Iran, North Korea. Actors generally unaccustomed to working together. There's no governing body here, no widely accepted principles for how to minimize current or future debris in space.
So in many ways, it's sort of similar to this whole question of climate change, where we know there's going to be a problem in the future. And how do you convince people to take some action today to deal with what's going to be a potentially really serious issue decades from now?
Whedon says there's no easy solution here. It's everyone's problem and nobody's problem at the same time. Some countries, like the U.S., have implemented policies requiring new satellites to have an exit strategy. But our previous space sins and the sins of others aren't going to be washed away anytime soon. For Here and Now, I'm Todd Bookman.